I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar, my plantain sugar, my plantain sugar, my plantain sugar. Ah, plantain, plantain, plantain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, your weekend review edition. This is your host, Dean, and as usual, almost always, I am here with the hardest working man in show business, besides Usher, Coach. What's going on, Coach? How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Look, I can never complain whenever Arsenal win. Like, there's nothing else to really say. I'm good.
Life is real good, man. Life is real good. You know, like, you've been... Your team been winning. You've been hugging your girl like you Usher at the Super Bowl. I've been real good for you, bro. I appreciate you. Thanks for joining me this week. Again, let's get right into it. Bundesliga, that's where we have to start. That is where we have to start. We have no choice. Thomas Tuchel has given us no choice because Bochum, 3, Bayern, 2.
I know we're talking about Thomas Tuchel and that, but Harry Kane, man. Like, we joked about the fact that, you know, the whole Spursy thing and shit like that. But no, guys, can you see that it's a real thing? Being Spursy is just, it's a way of life. And Gareth Bale, fortunately for him, because he always prioritized Wales over any, Wales and golf, should I say, over any sort of club football, I believe he was safe. Harry Kane put all his eggs in his basket in scoring as many goals for Tottenham and being England's top scorer and trying to be the Premier League top scorer, then realised it was too late, but the Spursiness is in his blood already. Trying to go to Barca to salvage some sort of... Not Barca, sorry, Bayern. To salvage some sort of trophy. And he's still not getting one. Like, it's in your blood to be Spursy, unfortunately. I just... You know, Thomas Tuchel is a victim of that more than anything. I think that's what we have to be honest with.
It is crazy to me that you have skated past RoboCop to shit all over Harry Kane, but I respect it because we're Arsenal fans. So
yeah, it is. Thomas Tuchel is never going to be good in my book. He can fuck himself in it. But look, had they re-signed Lewandowski, for example, I don't know, yeah, they probably run away with the league. That's just the way it goes. But the fact they signed Harry Kane, it's Spurs. That's what it is. Think of the most Spursy thing that can happen to your football club, right? And then you have it at Bayern right now. You've won 10 in a row, right? Your nearest competition bottled it. Then they lose their best player. And then the season starts. You've got the best, arguably the best striker in the world, along with one of the best young talents in the world, supplying him. A solid-ish defense, Neuer's back. You know, you missed out on Polina, but you got Pavlovic coming through. You know, things are looking pretty good. And then Xabi Alonso comes through the most reckless team in Europe. You know, top scorers are their wing backs and shit. That's some next level shit. Like, it's Spursy all over. It's the only thing that can happen to Spurs. But it's happening to Bayern.
It's crazy, man. Like, I never thought we'd see a day like this, but they actually started this game well. They started well away to Bochum. Musiala roofed a shot into the top of the net. Yeah. Then there was a brief break because we haven't mentioned on the show, but there have been a lot of protests in Germany from the fans about some investment plans from the governing bodies where they've been throwing tennis balls on the pitch, putting remote-controlled electric cars on the pitch to just break up the game.
That
was hilarious, actually, watching the stewards chase that shit around like idiots. So that gave the game a seven-minute pause. Then when the game started back up again, it felt like Musiala forgot how to play football because all of a sudden he became a pressing trigger for Bochum and they dispossessed him once. Takuma Asano scored a goal. Apparently that man hates the best of Germany. I don't know what his deal is with that. hate Germans. Then Musiala lost the ball again. Yeah. Bochum get a corner. Schlotterbeck converts the corner. Now it's 2-1 to Bochum. Yeah. At this point, Upamecano, who for some reason Thomas Tuchel had put it right back, already has a yellow card. Yeah. So I'm already saying, I tweeted it, this nigga is going to get a red card again. Yeah. Like he did in midweek during the Champions League against Lazio to give the penalty away for that loss. What happens? He gets a red, gives up a penalty. Bochum go 3-1 up. then of course Kane gets his bullshit ass consolation goal to boost his numbers. But yeah. Back to being Spursy, coach. Generally, we're recording this about 2 hours after that game ended.
Yeah.
Generally, the Bayern that we grew up on, Thomas Tuchel is on his ass already. He's out.
Yeah.
He still has a job. What do you think is going on there? Like, is he going to have to like sabotage himself even more to get that Bayern job? I mean, the Barcelona job he seems to be flirting with.
So I just think Bayern are at a point where because they don't quite know where they're going in the Champions League. They should beat Lazio at home, but you never know. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. I genuinely think if they don't make it through the Champions League against Lazio, he's gone. He essentially has one game, like, or should I say the next 3 weeks, two weeks, should I say, to save his job. I think that's what it is. If they don't beat Lazio, he's gone. I think that's what it is.
But does he even want to save the job, though?
No. Look, man, I don't know. I really don't know. I just know that Barca are so poor that they can't afford to take him off Bayern right now. Anyway, mm-hmm. They need for him to be sacked. So, yeah. Look, it's a funny thing. Look, he might be in cahoots with Barca. Like, yeah, I'll come through. Just let me fuck them up a little bit more, man. Like, and then yeah, I'll be all yours. You know, you never know, but.
Yeah. It's such traitorous behavior. Like, how can you leave the club in Germany or be coaching at the club in Germany and be making eyes at Barcelona in their current state? Like, I don't understand it. Like, I mean, they seem to be treating him well. Personally, I don't think, compared to a lot of the coaches that have been there in the past. I mean, Nagelsmann did not get the rope that he's getting right now.
Nope.
And they fired that dude because he was on a skateboard or a longboard or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Like, he was too young, too cool to be the coach of the biggest team in Germany. And you hired this man. And look at this shit.
They're suffering for it, man. I would have loved to have seen Muller's interview after this game if you had one, because last week was hilarious. So this week might have been on another level, man.
Honestly, I just think he couldn't get any louder, so they just didn't interview him this time. Like, what else is he gonna do? Like, basically, like, you know, reproduce the scene from what's that movie? You know the scene I'm getting at. You know the scene I'm about to mention. You know,
oh,
the one that always pops up on the internet when Germans get angry.
Oh, Inglourious Basterds.
No.
Oh,
no.
I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Yeah, that movie, that really good movie about World War, that movie. Yeah. But I can't remember the name, like Outbreak or some shit like that. Who knows? But in any event, it's going to be interesting watching the next couple of weeks to see how quickly Thomas Tuchel can make his way out of this job. Because clearly he doesn't want to work there anymore. Because, again, he played Diop. I know injuries, blah, 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 blah. But I almost feel as if you're better off playing a natural, bring a kid from the academy.
Mm-hmm.
And give him his debut at right back, as opposed to playing Upamecano, who obviously in this moment, you know, he's a good player, but he does have that bozo tendency to him. And after what happened in midweek, clearly this guy has to be lacking a little bit of confidence.
For sure.
Then you play him out of position in a game where everyone agrees that if you lose it, you might lose your job. Like, for me, he put a lot of pressure on that player, and I'm not really sure that was fair to the player or smart for the team.
So here's the thing. I actually think you're right there, but you know, speaking of an academy player, I think the one person that could probably walk away with his head held high, is Matthias Tell. I actually think he played quite a good game, but it wasn't enough. And I know we've already shat on Harry Kane enough today, but some of the chances he missed today made no sense. And let's do this in reverse order, right? Because we could talk about the pass from Musial all day long, but the header he missed at 3-2, I think that's probably the one that probably might have cost him the title potentially, because getting a draw is better than getting a loss every single day of the week.
Absolutely.
But then he missed obviously a clear, like, the most, like, he's the one player in the world that you want in that position going through one-on-one on goal. Like, he doesn't have to take a touch or anything like that. And he skies it high and wide. It's just like, yeah, you almost know this is not going to be their season.
Yeah, then he punches the ground as if the grass did something to him. Like, bro.
You were just on some.
You were just shit today, you know, doing a weird Haaland impression, but we'll get to that later. Their competition this season, Leverkusen, keep dashing away. They're now 8 points ahead because they went away to Heidenheim and won 2-1. Thanks to goals from Jeremy Frimpong and Amin Adli, before they gave up a late pointless consolation goal. They've now equaled Bayern's unbeaten record of 32 straight matches in that league. So I think I'm not going to call them champions elect yet, but in another month or so, if they can maintain this gap, they already won the game that we thought would knock them off course. So I'm not really sure that Bayern has any cards to play, but they just need to keep winning their games, I suppose. Yeah. Unlike Dortmund did last season when they gave it away on the last day, you know. So I don't see that happening. This team just seems to have a lot of moxie and sense to them. In any event, when Tuchel leaves, if he leaves, who do you think is the main candidate for Bayern next?
Do you know what? I answered so many of these questions on the United pod when asking who do you think replaces like Ten Hag, and it's hard to say. You just don't know. Like they all could try and lure Klopp. Like you don't know. Like you don't. You know, it's crazy. Like I couldn't tell you. I really couldn't tell you.
Klopp at Bayern would feel kind of icky to me. I don't know. It just feels wrong. It also feels right because he's Mr. Germany at this point. Apparently, he's like the most popular man in the country. I wouldn't know. Don't live there. Leipzig, Jose Mönchengladbach, got a comfortable victory with goals from Javi Simmons and Luis Openda, our boy. Wolfsburg hosted Dortmund. Fulkrug scored an early opener for the away team, but they were pegged back by Yannick Gerhardt equalizer. Mm-hmm. Darmstadt hosted Stuttgart, and Sehu Gurasi is officially back from AFCON because he scored the opener here before Mahmoud Dahoud added a second very, very late in the game after the 90th minute. And they needed that because the host actually got an even later cancellation goal in the fifth minute of extra time. So let's go through the standings real quick before we move on to the next league. Leverkusen are obviously top with 58 points, 8 points ahead of Bayern with 50 points. Stuttgart are a further 4 points back, which means that Bayern are actually closer to third than they are to first now, which is kind of crazy to think about. Dortmund are fourth on 41 points, and Leipzig are fifth on 40 points. And Frankfurt had the last European place with 33 points. This looks like this might be it at the end of the season as well. You know, some people might flip places here and there, but this looks like
Leipzig might come for Dortmund. Dortmund just don't feel like they're serious enough for me. Like, you just don't know. But yeah, man, I think Leverkusen obviously win it from here. Like, they surely win it. I think we have to remember as well, what, there's 18 teams in Bundesliga and they've played 22 games. Like, there isn't that long left of the season for them. On top of that, I think the most important thing in this table, though, is that Mainz, right, are 17th, which means they're going to be relegated. It should be like, yeah, I'm praying that they're relegated. So, yeah, I mean, forget the title race. Let's just make sure Mainz are relegated here, man.
Let's focus on the priorities now.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we're done with the Bundesliga. We go over to La Liga now. Rayo Vallecano hosted Real Madrid, the table toppers. And the game ended in a 1-1 draw. Real Madrid, I get as much as Real Madrid can heavily rotate their team. That's what they did. They don't have Bellingham. He's a little injured at the moment. He missed a Champions League game in midweek away to Leipzig as well.
But Brahim actually came back because I thought he was done when he came up. But he actually played yesterday. Crazy.
Yeah. He Ancelotti did say before the game that he'd be available. So he did play. But even so, he wasn't able to make the difference. Joselu scored the opener for them. Yeah. And Raul de Tomas scored a penalty equalizer later in the game, which seemed to just kill the game because neither team really did much after that goal.
I think Camavinga was unlucky because he wasn't even looking at the ball. It's just like, obviously, if your hands are not in a natural place, but it's like the ball has hit him. He hasn't extended his arm to go and the ball just hit him, you know? That was unlucky. But I think the most interesting thing in that game completely was Carvalho's red card, I think.
That was at the end. He was being a dick, though.
He was definitely being a dick, but I think it was, when a player runs into you like that, sometimes just giving him something a little back is... If I was a ref, I'd let it go, personally, because sometimes, like, shit...
I agree, but the reason why the ref didn't let it go in that instance was because, one, it was super late in the game.
Yep.
Two, he's on the away team. Yep. And three, and most importantly, literally 2 minutes before, he got a yellow card for dissent.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't a straight red. It was a second yellow.
Yeah.
Because he had already annoyed the ref. So the ref was like, man, fuck you, bro. Yeah. Get off my field, you know. So, and it's always nice to see Carvajal in a bad mood, you know. Like, I just like seeing him sad. He makes me happy that way. Yeah. A point for Real Madrid. 2 points dropped, I suppose. Atletico Madrid hosted Las Palmas. And it would interest you to know, Coach, that Las Palmas are actually the second best defense in La Liga. But they lost 5-0 this weekend. 5-0. Braces from Marcos Llorente and Angel Correa. topped by a fifth goal from Memphis Depay.
Griezmann rested.
And I think they look ready for Inter.
Yeah, I was going to say, what I love about this is the fact that Depay scored. And it's almost like, well, if Depay scored against you, then yeah, Atleti must be banging form.
He's looked very good the last couple of weeks. Yeah. And to do this against the second best defense besides Real Madrid in the league, that's impressive to me.
Yeah.
Without their best player in Griezmann.
Yeah.
Celta Vigo hosted Barcelona, and Barcelona won 2-1. A Lewandowski double, essentially created by Lamine Yamal's genius throughout the game. Bit of a lucky win, in my opinion, because they got that winning goal from a penalty very, very late in the game. And they had it had to be a retaken penalty because the keeper saved the original take from Lewandowski, but his feet were off the line. Then he converted the second attempt.
And just like, I'll tell you what, yeah, if we had VAR in the 2005 Champions League final, Liverpool might not have won that because he was so far off his line, almost like Jerzy Dudek. I will never, ever forget that. Ever.
That is a deep cut of hate right there. Yeah. Deep, thick slab of hate meat. Pause. but yeah, I like watching Celta Vigo every so often because it reminds me that Rafa Benitez is still alive and working, which is more than we can say for Jose Mourinho. You're alive, but you're not working, bro. Fuck you. That's what you get for calling niggas fat.
Benitez is always going to be good in my book because he's an honest man that always, no matter, like he's always going to stay in a job. Like he managed Chelsea, but like he's always gonna stay in a job and he's always gonna give it his best, man. Like one of my favorite club teams, like club sides, should I say, he managed, you know, years back before I knew I'd actually take this football shit like serious to the point where I'm talking about it every Sunday. So yeah, Benitez is always gonna be good in my book for sure, man.
I don't like the motherfucker, but it's nice to see that. It's nice to see his face. I'll put it that way. It's nostalgic for me at this point, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, him and Mourinho were responsible for some of the worst football games I've watched in my life.
Yeah, for sure.
Shit on a stick.
He managed Newcastle, bro. Like, he's always going to stay in a job, man. Like, that's, I respect that, man, so much.
You make him sound like a hooker or something, man.
Of course he is. What do you, of course he's a
hooker, bro. I suppose that's what every coach is on some level. Mallorca hosted your boys Real Sociedad, and they finally got their scoring boots back because they came from behind to win 2-1. Goals from Kubo and a late winner from Mikel Merino, coach.
Kubo, respect to him, man. Didn't celebrate against his one of the clubs he played for when he was on loan from Madrid. Always respect that. That was cool. Good finish. Look, they had to dust themselves down after what happened in the week. They were utterly dominant, man. There was no way they weren't not winning this game. Like, even though it was very, very late, they were always going to win this game. Like, they went for them pretty much from the outset. Look, I'm happy for them. Kubo scoring. All good to go, man.
Well, real quick on them. Midweek, they lost away at PSG.
Yeah.
What did you make of that game? Do you think they deserved to lose, if that makes any sense?
First half, they were absolutely like in the game. I feel like they really suffocated PSG. But
that press is incredible, man.
Yeah.
So great. So good.
Yeah. The quality showed in the end, man. Mbappe is Mbappe, man. I think.
Fair enough. They have an Mbappe and you don't. Athletic Bilbao will host Girona on Monday, which would give Girona a chance to cut Real Madrid's lead down to 3 points. But as things stand, Real Madrid are currently top with 62 points, which is 6 points ahead of Girona on 56. Barcelona in third on 54 points. Atletico Madrid are in fourth on 51 points. Athletic Bilbao, they have a lot to play for this season because they're in fifth on 46 points. And Real Sociedad have the last European place on 40 points, which is only a point ahead of Real Betis, who are currently playing against Alaves at the moment. So that might change by the time you hear this, people.
Hmm.
But we are done in Spain, and we move on to Serie A, where Inter had a lovely, easy stroll against Salernitana at the San Siro. It was a 4-0 victory. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this was so easy that they didn't even wear the right jersey at home. They wore like their orange cup jersey or some shit. Yeah. I don't know why they're doing that shit. As a traditionalist about this game, that shit pisses me off. Wear your home kits at home. If you want to do some crazy shit away from home, do your best, do your worst rather, but just wear your home kit at home.
Anyway, I'm in total agreement with you. I hate that shit so much.
Appreciate you, bro. Thuram and Lautaro ended this one pretty early. The goals came before the 20th minute. Dumfries added a third right before the first half ended, and Arnautovic scored one super late in the 90th minute. They, as much as Atletico Madrid looked ready for them, they also looked ready for Atletico Madrid. They've been in better form, definitely.
Oh yeah, like I feel as if because of all the hard work they've put into the league so far, they can afford to now really put all the eggs in their basket in the Champions League in the second half of the season. You know, maintain a level in the league, but then just know, look, Champions League, we got to the final last year. We've got a hard draw, but if we beat Atleti, then I'm pretty sure nobody wants to face us in the next round, basically. So, yeah, look, I'm a huge fan of what Inzaghi's doing this season. Like, I just think... When we talk about old school formations, the 3-5-2 is one of these old school formations, and nobody else is really doing it the way Inter are doing it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that Tuchel didn't just show his ass at Bayern and be like, this is what we're doing. Because we know that's what he wants to do anyway. So I don't know why he's faking the funk and failing like this. Oh, right. He wants a Barcelona job. My bad.
Yeah.
Verona hosted second place Juventus, and the title challengers a month ago are no longer challenging shit because they could only manage a 2-2 draw. They had to come from behind both times, goals from Vlahovic and Rabiot to save their ass. Michael Folorunshaw, Nigerian, plays for Verona, scored one of the goals of the season for them to open that game. Incredible banger.
Insane.
But yeah, I suppose for a relegation contender, a 2-2 draw against the second place team in the table is a good result, correct?
Yeah.
Fair enough. Frosinone hosted Roma. And Daniel De Rossi's new manager bounce seems to be continuing because they won 3-0. Very impressive performance. Great opening goal from Dean Huijsen, I think the name is pronounced. He's actually on loan to them from Juventus. And the other star player in this game was actually Mattia Soule for Frosinone, who is also on loan from Juventus.
I thought he was still at Bayern. Oh, my gosh.
Nah. On loan from Juventus. And okay. Huijsen scored that goal, followed by goals from Azmoun and Leandro Paredes to make it 3-0. But Frosinone probably deserved a little more from this game, but, you know, football is not about deserve, as we all know. Lazio hosted Bologna, and we mentioned this game because my boy Joshua Zirkzee scored the winner, and my agenda is agendaing. The name is going out in the streets.
The most interesting thing about Zirkzee is the fact that he plays for Motta, bro. No, I'm joking. But no, for real, like, Motta is coaching his ass off, man. He if there was an award for, like, young coach of the year, like, in Europe, I think Motta probably gets my vote.
So if he gets an offer from Juventus this summer, should he go?
No. Juventus should employ Jose Mourinho. That's who they should employ.
That is good hatred, my brother. Napoli continued their bullshit ass title defense with the 1-1 draw at home to Genoa. It took a 90th minute equalizer from Cyril Ngonge, a guy they signed in January, to save Walter Mazzarri's men from a home loss. But coach, there is chatter that before they play in midweek against Barcelona, they may want to fire Mazzarri, who really just got there like 2 days ago.
This is the kind of shit that I love. I won't lie to you. Like,
chaos.
All this chaos and shit just means that they're gonna beat Barcelona, bro. Think of the worst thing that can happen to Xavi right now: losing to a chaotic Napoli. It's going to happen.
I thought it was gonna be him being memed as fucking Michael Scott from The Office, which was hilarious. That was pretty fucking funny because I didn't realize how much they looked alike until yesterday. Anyway, let's do the standings real quick and get out of here. Inter, top with 63 points, 9 points ahead of Juventus. I think we're getting close to being able to call them champions elect. Milan are in third right now and currently losing as we record this to Monza. They're losing 2-1 to Monza. They're on 52 points, which is 7 points ahead of Atalanta, who have had a bunch of really good results lately. Five straight wins in their last five as well. Charles Di Catellaria has been wonderful during this spell. Did not score this week, but they did win 3-0. Bologna up to fifth. So maybe coach is right about Thiago Motta getting that award as the best coach in the best young coach in Europe this season. That was going to be Farioli, but we'll talk about Nice in a second here. And let's just get into it. Ligue 1. Lyon hosted second place Nice, and they beat them thanks to a first half goal from Aurel Mangala, who they signed in January. So a lot of these January signings were making the impact this weekend, coach.
Yeah, There's a lot of talk about how well Maitland-Niles is finally doing now, and I'll be honest, I just want to say I'm glad, because out of all the Helen that we've let go, he's the one that I kind of wish we kept. In fact, I do wish we kept him, to be honest. But yeah, look, it's hilarious because he's not, all of his best performances for them are not coming in midfield. They're coming from either wing back or right back.
Which is where Arteta put him when he got there, but the boy wasn't listening at the time. Yeah. You know, like, you live and you learn. I'm glad he has a career.
Yeah. Do you know what's crazy? Had he actually listened, Ben White might not be an Arsenal player.
Well, which I'm not sure I would want that. You know?
Yeah.
That's not the thing to say during Black History Month, but I would not want that. I really love Ben White. But I also loved Ainsley Maitland-Niles. Yeah. And I'll go to my grave believing that he is the best penalty taker in the history of the sport.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Like, nobody's talking to him. Fuck a Matt Letizia. Fuck a Ronald Koeman.
Yeah. It's
Ainsley Maitland-Niles, nigga. Lil hosted Le Havre and won that game 3-0 thanks to a hat trick from Jonathan David. We all know that annoys me, but I'm not going to get into that. That hat trick will still not get him a move to the elite teams that Fabrizio Romano is trying to force. He's been trying to force it for the past 7 years, it seems like, at this point.
You know what's crazy, though? Can we just actually have a chat about Fabrizio quickly? I know it's a bit of a detour, but I don't hate Fabrizio at all. But I feel like he's a bit of a problem. And I say a bit is a very, very large understatement. But I think one of the issues I have with him is the fact that because he is known for transfer scoops, when it's not January or the summer, his relevance plummets so much. And that's not a bad thing. Sometimes you just have to know your lane and stay in it. Like, you're going to be okay, Fabrizio. Like, you're going to be okay if you don't report on injuries and players making their debuts and shit. Like, bro, we don't come to you for that. We don't care about that shit. Like, in fact, if I had it my way, I wouldn't even have you reporting on exclusives from players being linked to clubs or being signed, kind of thing. I feel like it should still come from the clubs themselves, and if not the clubs, then the actual official journalistic mouthpieces, like your Ornsteins for Arsenal. You know what I mean? Those kind of channels, because having someone like him basically means that there's a potential memification, and the game's already got there, to be honest, but the memification of very serious stuff and very serious deals. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, shouting "Here we go" on the most expensive transfer of all time. I'm not being funny. Maybe I'm just being a Grinch here, but I just think that it sucks, man.
Like, listen, as grumpy as you are, I'm grumpier than you are. Like, there's nothing, I've never enjoyed his presence in the game, but I can't knock the hustle. Like, I mean, he was starving in January, because this was a bit of a dry window. It was the driest window I recall in some time. And he was posting the most random shit. He was posting, respectfully, he was like posting like women's football, and he was desperate, bro. You know, so, yeah, I mean, you know.
Do you know what I know? He was posting like transfers for players that were playing in like the lower tiers. I was like, okay, the jig's up now. Like,
it's over for you, bro. Yeah. It's real quiet for you right now. But hey, I don't want to knock the hustle. I want to see like a hater, because you know, people feel as if you're making money doing something these days, then it's valid.
People make money doing a lot of shit, you know, over the years.
Angel Gomez.
Yeah.
For Lil, I know we've always loved him on the pod. You've shot him up a bunch of times, but Uncle Righty on Twitter noticed him and gave him a shout out today. He thinks Gareth Southgate should be looking at him. What do you think?
Well, I don't think Gareth Southgate should be looking at him, because I don't feel like nobody really deserves to play under Gareth Southgate, to be honest. So no, you shouldn't be looking at him. However, the New England manager should be looking at him for sure, because he's an option. We're talking about, how do we get England's best midfield? You know, how do we get Bellingham and Rice in a midfield together with somebody else? I don't think the answer is Foden, by the way, but Foden has his uses for sure. Angel Gomez is the type of profile that, you know, potentially England should be looking at. But because Gareth Southgate is Gareth Southgate, he's not going to have a three-man midfield where everyone is equally adept in all three phases. He wants specialists there because he's just a coward, basically. So he wants players staying here and staying there. When it's like, at one point, Angel Gomez could easily drop deep while Declan Rice goes on a more than run. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's that kind of synergy that, and those kind of things that Angel Gomez would bring to a team. Gareth Southgate is not interested in that. He's just not. So yeah, I would love to see it personally, but yeah, it's not gonna happen. I mean, look, he's 23, bro. He's gonna be 24 after the Euros as well. Like, realistically, he's got what, 2 major tournaments in him. Yeah. Well, should I say he's got 2 Euros in him? He's probably got 2 Euros and a World Cup in him. Like, if he's not getting England call ups now, at this point, it's gonna be tough, man.
It's tough. Yeah. Well,
Mainu is there as well. Like, yeah.
Hey, listen, man. We still have Calvin Phillips.
Yeah.
Nantes hosted league leaders PSG and lost 2-0. Mbappe started on the bench in this one. Came on in the second half to convert a penalty that settled the match. Luca Hernandez had scored the opener. Now PSG are 14 points clear of Nice in second, who, as we mentioned earlier, lost to Lyon, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Monaco hosted Toulouse and lost 2-1 at home.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we wrote them off a couple weeks ago at this point, and I hate to be proven right, but we've been proven right. But the one goal they scored was scored by our boy Akliouche, so yeah, that makes me happy. Can't wait for him to leave Monaco.
Yeah.
The standings in France, my friends, PSG ahead on 53 points, followed by Brest on 40 points. I believe Brest may have just won a game against Marseille while we're recording this. A narrow win, it looks like.
Let me just double confirm. Yes, they have. And they were down to 10 men as well.
Very well.
In fact, they were down to 10 men, right, from the 60th minute, and they got the win in the 88th.
Very nice. Very nice. That's why I will always be a Brest man.
Yeah.
Nice are in third on 39 points. Lille are in fourth on 38 points. And Monaco are also on 38 points. And that is us done in France, my friend. Oui, bang bang, merci. Wu-Tang is forever. Shall we move to the Premier League, my friend?
The Super League. Let's go.
Let's do it, man. Brentford hosted Liverpool, the league leaders.
Yeah.
And they didn't put up much of a challenge, my friend, because it ended 4-1. And I saw some of the worst defending I have seen in my life from a team that is thoroughly injured. Thoroughly injured, you know.
Yeah.
But even though this was a comfortable win for Klopp's men, they suffered more injuries. Curtis Jones went off first, and shortly afterwards, Diogo Jota had what's that guy's name? Norgaard land on his knee accidentally. It did not look good, and he couldn't even walk off. He had to get stretchered off, which is bad. That guy has bad injury luck, man. He's a good player, but he has bad injury luck, which is crazy to say that, because sometimes I feel as if I transmit hate to that guy because I really hate his fucking face.
No, I really hate him.
I hate his fucking face.
I need him playing every week so he can stink it up. Like, where, like, I'm not being funny. If you're injured, bro, like, how can I hate on you? Get fit quickly, please. No, but to be honest, Brentford confused the shit out of me because you don't play Liverpool like that ever. You don't ever play Liverpool like that. And they almost didn't respect them. And it's annoying me because I know by the time it comes around to the fact they have to play us at the Emirates, they're going to turtle up there.
Yeah.
They're going to respect us, but they didn't respect Liverpool. It's just like, it's so unfair. Nunez's goal, I don't know if you saw Michael Owen's tweet.
But no, I never see anything Michael Owen does. Out of respect for him.
Yeah. Let me actually read it out, right? Let me read it out. But
you're risking that I'll fall asleep when you do this, bro. Michael Owen is very boring.
But to be honest, it's actually I couldn't agree more. And when it comes to finishing, Michael Owen is like one person you absolutely should listen to. Like, you know, we talk about footballers not knowing shit. Like, no, Michael Owen, if he's telling you about finishing, you fucking listen to Michael Owen. But he goes, that finish from Darwin Nunez yesterday was insane. I can't stop watching it, and I can't begin to explain how difficult that skill is. Moving at pace, the ball running away from you, being inside the box with no room for error, incredible. But, in capital letters, it is also further proof that if he is to get close to becoming a great player many people think he can be, he has to adapt his way of thinking. I mean, to even consider that finish is madness. It's a 1 in 10, 2 in 10 finish at best. Learning to slot, think, or go around the goalkeeper is a far more productive way to score and will increase his chances to 4, 5, and 10. Thus massively increasing his end return. I'm really not trying to rain on his parade as that goal was pure class, but I'd rather see it when Liverpool are 3-0 up and not at 0-0. Now, before we get into this, Dean, that is arguably some of the fairest and most honest criticism I've ever seen a footballer, especially a footballer that's heavily in the media, give a current player, a current player that's playing. And I personally would love to see more of that. It was thorough. It was thorough. It was fair. It wasn't. Oh yeah, who do you think he is? No, he structured it in a way that was so constructive, and he clearly wants what's best for him. And he gave him all of his props. Like, I love that personally. And when it's coming from someone that was so good at his job, it makes it even better. Like, I love that personally. I don't see any sort of issue with that. And to top it off as well, he's absolutely spot on. What the fuck is he doing trying that finish? Like, seriously.
Honestly, I can't find a single thing to disagree with Owen there. And yeah. I think what makes it even more sort of prescient to me listening to that, to you read that tweet, is that is maybe the hardest skill you can master in the game. Before my knees went, that was the one thing I could never master. I never figured that out before I stopped playing football. I never figured it out. But Darwin Núñez, as we say, he's box office.
He's an enigma. Like, and the thing is, that finish in that situation makes him exactly who he is. That's Darwin Núñez. Now, if he's going to, you know, in a couple of weeks' time, he goes through a goal again and he starts slotting it like under the keeper, then the rest of the league needs to be fucking worried. Because, yeah. So,
honestly, I feel as if we keep talking about him as if he's not going to, as if he has some, obviously, every player can get better and he's young, but I honestly feel as if he doesn't get better than he is now, he's still a very useful player to have. Maybe he's not 85 million worth of player, but I wouldn't mind him at my club.
Yeah.
Put it that way. You know, like Núñez and fucking Havertz as our, oh my God, that'd be fucking nice. I mean, it'd be chaotic, but it'd be nice as fuck. It'd be like watching, I don't know, like Roman Reigns and The Rock team up in wrestling or some shit, man. Just big niggas kicking the fuck out of motherfuckers, man. Like goals are irrelevant. I just want to see people get fucked up. Mohamed Salah came back in this game, which wasn't necessarily Klopp's plan because he started Salah on the bench. He only came on after one of the injuries. I forget which one.
The Jota injury.
Right. Then Núñez also went off at halftime. It was more precautionary, which worried me at the time, but it was more precautionary, which makes sense given all the injuries they have right now. But Brentford were really generous, man. It's as if Ethan Pinnock... He didn't play. Ethan Pinnock didn't play, and you know he's not the kind of person that gets a whole lot of props. But him missing from their back line for the first time made this the worst I've ever seen Nathan Collins and Ben
Mee play. I believe.
What's that?
In 53 games, I think he's played their last 53 games.
That's crazy. So he's clearly someone that's important to their structure, their leadership, all that stuff, because they missed him yesterday.
Yeah.
Their defenders were just doing the dumbest shit ever. Mm-hmm. That was not, I didn't watch any Thomas Frank post-game stuff, but I'm sure he said something like, I didn't recognize my team.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's no fucking way, man. It almost looked as if they were like, how can we contribute best to Klopp's farewell talk? Because like you said, it looked like they didn't respect Liverpool and Liverpool made them pay. Like that first goal, Núñez only had that much space because Brentford were so far up the field. Like, what are you doing?
After a set piece as well, like it didn't make any sense, man. But look, they smoked them. Liverpool are in good form. If I'm a Liverpool fan, the only thing I'm worried about is these injuries really like catching up on them. Because look, Alisson is out of a hamstring injury. Mm-hmm. Hamstrings are just so touchy. You just never know how long it's going to be. You never know. Okay, a player comes back, you never know if it's going to flare up again. It's bad, you know. So,
On we move. Burnley hosted Arsenal, and that ended 5-0. If you are a fan of this pod, you've probably seen the Arsenal pod in your feed for over 24 hours at this point. So if you want more details on that one, go enjoy the pod. We said quite a lot. Newcastle hosted Bournemouth, and that one ended 2-2. I would say Newcastle did well to snatch a late point here against a really good team in Bournemouth this season. Matt Ritchie got the late equalizer. And I think, considering all the chatter this week with their director of football or sporting director, whatever his title is, and Dan Ashworth being linked to Manchester United pretty thoroughly.
Well, Dan Ashworth has actually officially been placed on gardening leave by Newcastle. Oh. Yeah.
And I was reading some articles with them talking about they're worried that he's gonna like reveal secrets and shit. I'm like, what? Mm. What fucking ain't no fucking secrets in this game no more, man. Like
at the elite level, everybody knows everything, bro.
Exactly. Like what
they
the
fuck? You know, literally like, all fuck the same hoes.
Two Bournemouth goals came from Sri Lanka and Semenyo. So AFCON is still going on for some of us. Fulham hosted Aston Villa, and I like to call Fulham the English Leipzig because they can beat anyone and they can lose to anyone. Because mm-hmm. Ollie Watkins double did them in this game, coach.
Yeah, love Ollie Watkins. I wish we could play Fulham one more time this season. I'm fucking annoyed that we dropped points to them, but Villa look to be the ones right now holding their nerve for top four. You know, they've had a wobbly, like, you know. I want to say probably since the turn of the year, maybe a little bit earlier. And they seem to be like, you know, producing. Like they won 5-0 the other day as well. I am personally of the opinion that while Unai will most likely still bottle it, they're not going to bottle it as early as I think they will. I think they're going to last longer than another team that's vying for top four. Won't say their name, but yeah, it's not looking good, mate.
There you have it. Nottingham Forest hosted West Ham, and they won 2-0. West Ham's bad form is continuing. Calvin Phillips got a red card in this one. Yep. Probably deserved. He was being a little too aggro. Even though he has such a kind face, it's like, bro, you can't. You know,
teddy bear.
Come on, man. Like once you have that yellow for like aggressive behavior or mm-hmm. dissent, like Carvajal earlier, you can't go around kicking people. No. It's just not going to work out for you.
I will say though, Awoniyi's goal was fucking out of this world, man. I love those type of goals, man. Into your feet, spin, bang, like absolutely fantastic.
Like I couldn't tell the difference between him and Lukaku in that moment. Like that's that Lukaku has scored that goal like 80 times in his career. Mm-hmm. Like it's his trademark. And Awoniyi, a fellow wrestler and African, did the same. The other goal to sort of ice the game came from Callum Hudson-Odoi. He's been scoring goals lately, man. I think he's back to that form that Chelsea fans thought he would have at one stage in his career before the Achilles popped. You know, so it's good to see that. David Moyes, he's been under a lot of pressure for obvious reasons. At the end of this game, he talked his shit. He stood his ground. He essentially told West Ham fans, like, hey, listen, man, you may want me out, but here are the facts.
Yeah.
You've never had it as good. Yep. You know, you've had managers that played better football than me. You've had managers that gave you more excitement, but none of them won like I did.
Yep.
Is he right or wrong to sort of, you know, so because some people hear that and say he's antagonizing the fans. He should be more humble. Where do you stand?
To be honest, I always like when people go off reservation. It adds another dimension to shit of the chaos. He's not wrong. He's absolutely spot on. I just feel like if you want to endear yourself to the fans, there's a way that you do it.
I mean, well, here's the thing, coach. Can you endear yourself to the fans in the middle of a losing streak?
The only way you can is by winning, I suppose.
Exactly. So if you're not going to win, you might as well talk your shit. What are they going to do, fire you? They can't fire you. The board will fire you if they want to. And I don't know. I just don't feel that I don't understand asking people to be humble, to not stand on their achievements because shit is not going well at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, because guess what? They're probably not going to lose every game until the end of the season.
Yeah.
They're still in eighth or ninth place. I don't really look that low on the table because I'm an Arsenal fan. But they're not. It's been worse. It's been better, but it's been worse. And I know it's grim to watch his teams at the moment, but they're missing Paqueta. And he'll be back at some point, and they'll probably pick up some results again. You know, so I'm not going to tell people how to support their team, but I just feel like the Moyes out stuff, it probably needs to calm down. Like, give him the season at least. Like, when a man wins the only European title in your history and has gotten you into Europe multiple seasons in a row, all things that have never happened in the history of the club. I'm not saying he owns the stadium now or some shit, but
no, he does. I'll tell you why he owns the stadium, because West Ham don't even own the fucking stadium. It's called the London Stadium, bro. It was a gift from Newham Council, yeah. It was a gift, bro. So yeah, if it does have an owner, it's fucking David Moyes. How about that?
Well, shit. We might as well move on. Tottenham hosted Wolves and lost 2-1. Yao Gomez, he's not going to be at Wolves much longer. Yeah. I've liked them for a while. Maybe I haven't talked about him, but I've liked what I've seen of him in that midfield for Wolves. And he scored a double in this game, which would not hurt his market value. The second, great assist from Pedro Neto. He's not up there with Elanga, but he's close. That boy is quick.
You know what's crazy about him as well? It's the fact that he's already had an ACL. And it
does, he's had an ACL and like 20 hamstrings on top of it.
Yeah. So it's
and
like
still moving like that.
Him and Wirtz most likely pursue the same female company for sure. Like it's nuts. Like he doesn't look like he's ever had that sort of injury before. He might even have gotten faster. Like they might have put some extra pep in his step or something.
Extra pep is the right word right there.
You know,
Big Ange, man. You know that whole straight talking stick. It. I feel like the media is slowly turning on this dude. You know, because it was real cute to be talking straight with motherfuckers when you were leading the table.
Yeah.
Even though you were kind of overperforming your XG and all that, and now that things are kind of reverting to the mean, if you will,
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden straight talking feels a bit like lashing out at people.
Yeah.
When do you think the pressure starts rising on this dude?
When they fall out of European out of Premier League places, that's when it's like, oh shit, now we have to start winning games. I think that's when he probably cracked. And look, don't get me wrong, Tottenham, especially their Tottenham's front six is should technically be good enough to get them that Champions League football.
I think so.
But it's not just that, it's the way they actually play.
Defending is pathetic.
Yeah, they leave themselves so open. Like, and with all due respect to that, Van Deven is good, right? But you're playing next to Romero. Romero is an idiot, guys.
He's shit, bro. I don't care what they say, he's shit. I don't care what he won. He's shit.
He's the simple fact is he's just an idiot. Concentration levels are shit. He gets too hot-headed. He's very rash. You know, I don't feel like he's the sort of defender that you can rely on in this sort of running. So for all the kind of good work, you know, that they can do going forward, someone like him is going to let them down. It's just going to happen.
And also, I just think from a squad management standpoint, and, you know, like everyone can learn and, you know, with enough time and experience, but I feel like Ange is, like, he needs to moderate this approach to last in this league because I think he's putting too much strain on his defenders.
Mm.
They run backwards so often. Like, Van de Ven already had a hamstring injury earlier this season. Like, I just feel as if that's not sustainable. You can't keep having guys run backwards so many times in one game, you know, like, because people are just running through them.
Yeah.
You know, and they got a chase, and they only conceded two goals, but that's 0 points.
Yeah.
And you're always risking injury when you get to this stage of the season with guys having to run back so often. That's just what I noticed in Tottenham games. Like, everybody just running backwards all the time.
We're gonna get to United, but it almost kind of feels like United, but Tottenham, I feel like, are a much better attacking outfit. It's easier. Yes. But with Ange, I remember like when they're speaking about us before the derby, he was like, yeah, we're gonna scare the life out of them. Yeah, we want to go for them. It's like, okay, cool. That's admirable and shit. And if not for some poor finishing, like, we would have smoked your shit in that first half.
A fucking mistake from Jorginho.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? But in that first half, you would have been done. We would have been like 4-0 in the first half kind of thing. So, yeah, like, you know, that's good. But over the course of a season, you need a bit more than we're going to scare the life out of them, you know? So, and I feel like he's just gonna be happy-go-lucky in a lot of his approach to this shit. And when it's too late, when it's the business, then he's gonna, oh shit, maybe we need to change things up. But by then, it's probably gonna be a bit too late. But yeah, it's refreshing to see a team play like that in the Premier League, especially with how much pressure is on all these teams to, like, you know, make as much money as they can and shit.
Yeah. So I mean, credit to him again. Yeah. I like that you gave him some props there, but. Ultimately, I think for him to last in this league, whether it's at Tottenham or somewhere else, he needs to show a little, you know, like, there's no point in getting compliments for playing this gung-ho shit if you don't fucking learn and, you know, learn how to vary your approach a little bit. Because I couldn't watch a team like that as my team. Like, that is not entertaining to me, watching my defenders run backwards 20 times a game. I don't like that shit.
Yeah.
On we go. Sheffield United hosted Brighton, and honestly, we should stop talking about these motherfuckers because they do not belong in the Premier League. They started Mason Holgate, who, you know, respectfully, is a criminal. He's a fucking hooligan. He's been doing shit like this for years. He's done it to Arsenal. I've seen him do it in many games.
He's done it to everyone. He's done it to Liverpool. Like, I've seen him do some nasty shit to pretty much everyone at this point, man. If he's got any pets, I'm pretty sure, like, he's fucking them up as well, man. Like, look, that tackle was
so bad, man.
Yeah, like, literally, that tackle was so bad that I literally,
it's racist.
That's what it felt like. It felt like a genuine attack. Like, it just felt like a hate crime. It was so bad. And
like, why?
Like, why would you be so, especially like at 0-0? Like, there's nothing nothing's happening in the game.
15 minutes into the game.
It just felt so mean and so mean spirited and shit. So I was just like, yeah, man, get this thug off the pitch, man. You should probably, you know, the people talk about, yeah, he's going to get a straight red 3-game ban. They need to review and probably give him double that at least, I think, because it's... Yeah,
just to spare his fellow professionals.
Yeah, keep them niggas safe. Fuck him. Like, forget he's like, keep everyone else safe. Like,
you know what's crazy? The fucking ref did not see that as a straight red on the field. VAR had to intervene.
To be fair, they rectified it quite quickly. But again, like, if there was no VAR, yeah, he stays on the pitch. That's insane, man.
Yeah, to commit more murders.
Yeah.
Like, I think Mitoma won man of the match, and I think he literally won it because he survived that tackle. Because he didn't score. He didn't score in the game.
It was an attempt on his life.
It was a sniper's bullet, says
me. Yeah, like, literally, it was just terrible. It was just terrible, man. But, yeah, I suppose we're talking about this because, you know, to save Sheffield United's blushes. But, look, Brighton's beat the shit out of them, and they're going to beat the shit out of them regardless of if they were down to 10 men or not.
Pretty much.
I'm sick of seeing a dangerous face, to be honest.
Can you just leave it there? Leave it right the fuck there. We're Nigerians. Yeah. Luton Town hosted Manchester United, and they lost 1-2 at home in a game that they probably should have gotten something out of, coach.
Yeah, I mean, but there's a pod out about it already. You guys are some funny questions, despite the fact the majority of you really just want to get rid of Ten Hag. I couldn't imagine why. But yeah, the pod for that is already out. But I suppose there's one thing I want to ask you. And do you think if Ten Hag gets the backing in the summer, he gets the players that he wants to continue this style of football, which is, you know, suck teams in and hit them on the counter with to my mind, probably the fastest attack in the league?
I know there's more than one way to skin a cat, but if United's goal is to get back to the glory days and win shit, a transitional approach to winning games is probably not going to do that for you in the long run. No. I just don't see that as a thing that can work. Like, maybe if they go more towards the Liverpool side of things, you know, the club, you know, sort of rock and roll shit, that could work. But playing on the counter, like, you know, in a lot of games in the Premier League, the good teams basically have to break a deep lockdown. And until United can consistently do that, I don't care who you buy. Like, transition shit is not going to work all the time because some people are just going to give the ball and be like, break us down. So I'm not, if that's his plan for the long term with United, I'm not supporting that with any of my money if I'm Sir Dave or Sir Jim or whatever the fuck the sir's name is. I don't any of us, I don't fucking know, man. It's a bunch of crackers out there.
to be honest, that's where I'm at as well. I just feel like even if you wanted to do that, you know, Bruno isn't the man to essentially lead that.
I almost feel as if Bruno's presence there has forced Ten Hag to sort of settle on that approach. Because that's not what he was doing at Ajax when he got to the semifinals of the Champions League.
Yeah.
Where he's like, well, I have this guy's under contract here for however many years.
And I've made him my captain. Yeah.
You know, he has CTE. We kind of have to play this way. We have these quick players. This makes sense for now.
Yeah.
If he tells the ownership that, oh, I'm trying to go to a different approach where we control games more, then maybe you can take the risk of backing him. But ultimately, I feel like at least I know the online fan base is often different from the guys that go to the stadium, the guys who go to away games. But I don't get the sense that he has enough of a wide base of support within the fan base for them to spend another 100, 200 million on players for him and go again next season. Mm. But I also don't know who would replace him, you know. I wonder what Dan Ashworth thinks, but
we'll see. I will say one last thing on United and Bruno is just on the face of it, right? If you go to Alex Ferguson and you say to him, United played away to Luton Town, right? Just Luton Town, right? It's Luton Town. And you say United's captain was the worst midfielder on the pitch. I genuinely think Sir Alex Ferguson would run down to Carrington and say, right, that's it. I'm taking control of things over here, because on the face it's just not good enough. It's just not good enough. There's no way the United captain should be the worst midfielder on the pitch against Luton Town. Well, when there's an 18-year-old playing for you and playing on your side, when there's Ross Barkley who's having a renaissance of his career at 30 years old, when there's a Loney from Arsenal who's 23 years old at this. Like, all these things are around you and you find a way to still be the worst midfielder on the pitch, and that, like, on the face of it, I don't care for any sort of deep analysis, that's just not good enough. point blank period. And it's happened more than one occasion where they played against teams that United are obviously better than, but Bruno still the best midfielder amongst the five or six midfielders on the pitch. It's ridiculous. It actually infuriates me, seriously. Like, yeah.
Well, listen, man, United fans think he's better than Odegaard, so I'm happy for them, you know.
Yeah.
And in the game of the weekend, I know Coach was praying for the stadium to fucking blow up or some shit. But Man City hosted Chelsea, and the game ended 1-1. I think, okay, I'm not going to be deceptive about this. If Haaland didn't have a bad day,
yeah,
City win is going away. Even though that first half wasn't very good, and Chelsea could have been 3-4 goals up in that first half. But I think ultimately Pep's changes at halftime were so impressive. You know, basically getting, Akanji out of midfield, bringing Bernardo on, getting more technicality into midfield and holding the ball for longer periods. Letting KDB and Foden basically gangbang that right half space in the second half. But Haaland just didn't have his shooting boots on today, which, it was fun to watch this game because we were recording the Arsenal pod while we did it alongside our great friend Gabby. But, I don't even know what the takeaway is from this game. Like, Pochettino has always had Pep's number on some level. Like, obviously, he doesn't have a great record against him, but these sort of performances where he nicks a goal, you know, like, or back in the Tottenham days when City could never win there for whatever reason. This was not a surprise
Champions
per se.
League as well.
But was it, do you think it was just a mistaken approach from Pep? Like, why is he making this kind of mistake at this stage in his career? Like, Pep should know better.
Do you know what it was? I think a bit of complacency creeps into City. I think that's what it was because when he spoke at full time, he said, look, at half time, I told the players, let's just go. He said, let's go. And I think the players understood, okay, let's stop fucking around. I think they expected to just walk over Chelsea, basically. I know prior to the game, he said, oh, Chelsea are this, they're that, they're amazing. And it's never a good sign.
Never.
And then it got to half time, was like, oh, maybe this guy was spitting. Maybe Chelsea are fucking good. but no, seriously, I think the City players were just like, yeah, we're just way better than Chelsea. Which is strange because Chelsea gave them a very good game and scored four past them. Even though City scored four as well. But I feel like that was, you know, a very evenly contested game. City woke up in the second half, and I think they just essentially showed how much better they are than Chelsea without actually showing it on the scoreline. Haaland, on the other hand, though, look, fantasy managers all over the pit, all over the country, all over the world, should I say, I know are completely and utterly crestfallen, but fear not. Look, it's a double game week. They play Brentford, who just gave up 4-0. City are at home. Haaland is pissed. He's going to score a double hat trick. It's fine, I promise you. Pep also said, look, in regard to Haaland, look, I played 11 years as a professional, whatever. I scored 11 goals. I have no input onto how Haaland should play as a striker, basically. And it's fact.
But I do. I have some thoughts on that. He's still going to be the best striker of his sort for the next 10 years or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
But what I did notice was that the way Chelsea set up in that first half, Haaland basically became the outball for City, where whenever they could get through Chelsea's press, which was very good. Shout out Conor Gallagher. Yeah. He was all up Rodri's ass in this game. It was crazy. Yeah. But when they could sort of build through Chelsea's press, the ball almost always ended up with Haaland in space. Yeah. And his link-up play was so bad.
Yeah.
I feel as if psychologically that shit fucked with him. So when he eventually started getting chances in the game, he just started snatching at him. Because if you look at the chances he missed, man, there were a lot of them, you know, like especially the headers, you know, for a guy that's 6'4", it should not be hard to convert some of these chances. We've seen him score more difficult chances on a regular basis. So it was definitely just a bad game, but I suspect that his approach to finishing in this game was just like a slight mental thing affected by the fact that he knew he was letting his team down with the buildup because he was the outball. It's like Pochettino essentially said, we're going to go man to man with everybody else. And you're going to get the ball and you have to make a decision like him and Alvarez, Julian Alvarez, when he started in the first half, they just kept losing the ball and Chelsea kept breaking on them. And that happens enough times. What's that?
It's strange because Alvarez is really in builder. Alvarez is insane, to be honest.
I don't really rate his build. I mean, compared to say, you know, the options that they have.
Oh, like, yeah, of course, of course. But I mean, as an actual, because look, he's not a midfielder by any sorts. Like, he's a forward, isn't it? But his decision making in those half spaces or whatnot, he always, especially the short passing, it always seems to be something that just helps the team and hurt the opposition. But yeah, it was a weird one in general. But yeah, you're right. In terms of Haaland's build, Haaland's never ever going to be the build up guy kind of thing. It's just that when teams ask him to do that, and he's already having a bad day, he almost seems like a detriment to the team, which is crazy to say about Haaland, because I feel like
you
should never ever rule out Haaland ever. But mentally, I just think it all went for him.
You saw the way he reacted at the end when the camera was like panning around him, and he was frustrated, and you saw it on his face throughout the game.
Yeah, and that's why, guys, don't worry. If you triple captain Haaland, I promise you, Brentford are going to feel it. It's fine. Nothing to panic about, okay?
All right, that's us done in the Premier League. Let's do the standings real quick. Liverpool are still top with 57 points. Arsenal are right behind them on 55 points. City, with a game in hand, have 53 points. If they win that, they go ahead of Arsenal. But Arsenal do have the best goal difference in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Who saw that coming for a team that doesn't have a striker?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy to me. Villa, as coach mentioned, are still in there fighting for that top four spot. And they're on 49 points. Tottenham are 2 points behind on 47. United have made up some ground on both of these teams and are now on 44 points, 5 points behind Villa in fourth place.
Yeah.
So it's getting tight at the top. West Ham, that we talked about, they are still in ninth, despite their bad form of the last month. So maybe it's not all bad, West Ham fans, but you know, that's your business, not mine. And that is us done for the Premier League and typically for the entire podcast. Mm-hmm. But very briefly, the Champions League continues this week, Coach.
Mm-hmm.
And we have four fixtures. We have PSV Dortmund. I think this one is going to be fun to watch. I don't know what happens,
but
I just think they're like evenly.
Peter Bond is going to be like, look, these guys fucked Bundesliga last year. Let's go fuck them up, innit? Like, he's just like, yeah, fuck it. Let's just play five strikers and see what happens, kind of thing. Like, they ain't got the mental capacity for it, and that will mean Dortmund win 3-1. So
let's see what happens. I don't know if I'll be watching it, but I would like to watch it. Mm. I'll definitely watch it afterwards for sure, because I think there's no way we're getting less than four goals from that tie.
Yeah, for sure. Like,
Inter versus Atletico Madrid. This is a glamour tie. We've talked about it. We talked about it last week as well. Have you decided on who you think will win the first leg? I think Inter is hosting.
I think Inter win it. I think Inter win it with that 1-0.
I hope you're right. Hope you're right. Porto hosts Arsenal. We're in a confident mood. Gabby thought we were going to win. You think we're going to win.
I'll put it like this. Joke aside, I will absolutely take a draw. I just think at home, whether it's Europe or Premier League, I think at home Arsenal can beat anyone. So, yeah, I would. If we get away from the 1-1 draw, it's fine to me. Like, it's absolutely fine. Like, I won't panic. Respect to Porto though. Porto obviously are not, you know, the force they once were and shit like that. Like, they will obviously give Arsenal a good game, but I feel like at home Arsenal should be able to just get over the line, no problem. So.
Well said, coach. And Napoli hosts Barcelona in the let's both fuck up Maradona's legacy derby.
Yeah.
What do you think happens? Will Mazzarri coach this game? That's the first question.
No. It will just be the most what's the word I'm looking for? Barcelona thing if they were to lose to a team that just sacked their coach, like, for sure.
That would be funny as hell, man. And before we leave, we never really talk about the championship, but I thought Leicester versus Middlesbrough was a great game to watch. I don't know why I watched that, but it was a fantastic game. Michael Carrick's boys went away to Leicester and ruined the party, because Leicester are very close to wrapping that league up already.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie Vardy still looks like Jamie Vardy, by the way, on the field, at least at that level. In the Prem, he was looking a little slower. Down there, he looks like Jamie Vardy again. And Carlos Corberan, West Brom's coach. Did you see this red card, coach?
I didn't, unfortunately, no.
He thought the ball went out of bounds and on the sideline. He thought it was going out. It went out of bounds for a throw.
Okay.
So he steps into the game and interferes with play, and the ref has to give him a red card. Yeah. And the new owner, the new potential owner of West Brom was there with his wife watching this shit. No. Ended up losing like 3-0. It was just a bad day for everyone involved. But it was the strangest red card I recall seeing in my life so far, I would say. I didn't know that was a rule where the coach gets red carded if he interferes with play. I thought it was just like a... It feels like a caution would be sufficient there.
Yeah. Do you remember last year when at Villa, when Arteta basically was part of the build-up for the throw-in? Like, yeah. Imagine Arteta steps in the field there and he got sent off after doing his wheeling motion.
Like, listen, man, Richard Keys would do some really disgusting shit on the airwaves then. Yeah. We'd have to cancel this pod because we'd have no comeback to that asshole. Definitely. Folks, please like this podcast, share it with everyone that cares about football, and if you feel like it, give us a review, because that helps us get seen these days. Coach, anything else for the people?
Just look, appreciate all the love, keep listening, keep sharing. Some exciting shit is happening sooner than you think.
Very soon exciting shit.
Yeah, man.
Exciting shit.
Yeah, so
exciting. Yeah, shit, man. I'm so happy, bro. Oh my god.
Man, just keep supporting, and yeah, love you guys. Peace.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Ha! Work all day, hustle and pray. Got no way to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Ah, plantation.